Jason Waller here, True Underdog Podcast and YouTube channel. Listen, make sure you subscribe today. You can go to iHeartRadio, Spotify, Apple Podcasts. You can go to our YouTube channel, True Underdog, or you can visit trueunderdog.com and subscribe to all of it.
Damn, 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 True Underdog. Damn, damn, unleash damn, the power within. Damn, damn,
True Underdog Podcast here. Jason Waller, Underdogs. We have got a show for you today. A dear friend of mine, a family doctor of mine. This guy is a badass. I can't wait to introduce him and let him tell you some of the things he does. But he is a board certified holistic medicine practitioner. He specializes in the use of vitamins, minerals, herbs, natural hormones, and also utilizes applied kinesiology, acupuncture, and nutritional therapies in his practice. Did I do okay with that, doctor? Dr. David Brownstein, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, Jason. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, I'm super excited. I mean, we've got introduced from a mutual friend. You have made magic with my wife and my kids. My wife was losing a lot of her hair. She was having a lot of hormonal problems. Our good dear friend, Jeff F., he swore about you. I've seen your book. I've read some of your book. I mean, you're world renowned here. You're next level. So I want some of the folks to understand, you know, for 28 years, you've been successfully treating flu, pneumonia through boosting patients' immune systems and vitamins and minerals. Basically, taking the things that we are supposed to have in our body and re-putting them in the body. So in a quick 2-minute type commercial, explain exactly what it is you do to make magic happen.
Well, Jason, I wouldn't call it magic. I would just say, I'm working to support the human biochemistry and physiology to the best of its abilities. We're designed pretty well by our maker, that if the body has the right raw materials, it can function optimally. You can have enough energy. You can think clearly. You can go do what you need to do during the day. You're not tired. You're not achy. You're not brain fogged. And the way to do that is to give the body what it needs. And the body needs nutrition. It needs proper vitamins and minerals. It needs hormone balancing. It needs exercise, it needs water, it needs good food. So if you really give the body what it needs, it can do pretty wonderful things for us.
Well, you know, we just went through a pandemic and you and I have talked a few times about how that went down. And I know during that time, my daughter, Mackenzie, who's 17, that you've seen, she had a cough we couldn't get rid of and it just wouldn't go away. And so we were using albuterol and we were using our the breathing machine, what it's called.
Nebulizer.
Yep, the nebulizer. And so my wife called you and you called in some stuff and literally it fixed it like that. I mean, we were going 3 or 4 days where she couldn't breathe. She was coughing. She couldn't stop coughing and couldn't breathe. You had some kind of vitamins or something in this bag that we took and it was some kind of saline and she literally was better in less than an hour. Explain that because that's crazy.
So when COVID started a year ago, you know, I followed it from the beginning. The first reports in China in December of 2019 were 3 atypical pneumonia cases in China from a novel coronavirus. And from that moment on, I followed every report that came out with it. And then towards the end of February, there were a couple of cases in the U.S. and it was coming. I mean, it was coming from the West Coast to the East Coast. And I had a meeting with my staff and the staff asked me, are we going to close the office? And I said, why would we close the office? This is the most important time we're going to have in medicine. I've been practicing medicine for 28 years. And I said, the first 27 years and a few months were practice for this thing to happen right now. Here, conventional medicine has nothing to offer people. They're going to tell people to hide in their basement. We have therapies to offer people with viral illnesses. We know how to do it. We've been treating flu and flu-like illnesses for over 25 years using a simple nutritional protocol therapy. And our patients don't die. They don't get hospitalized. They don't get pneumonia. Like anywhere near the reported values. And so when Corona was coming, I told my staff, hey, I think we're going to be able to treat this. I think we're going to be fine. Our patients will be fine. We know what we're doing with this. Now, I said to them, look, I've never treated this strain of coronavirus, but I've treated many other strains with it. 1/3 of all flu-like illnesses are coronavirus strains. So one of the things we've been doing for over 2 decades is nebulized hydrogen peroxide and iodine. What that means is it's a solution. We sterilely mix a saline bag, put in a tiny amount of hydrogen peroxide and a small amount of iodine, and patients nebulize that. Nebulizing means you breathe a liquid solution into little particles so it can get deep in the lungs. And asthmatics use nebulizers for their therapy to get the asthma medication deep in their lungs. So we've been having people nebulize hydrogen peroxide and iodine for over two decades for pneumonia, for flu, for colds, for COPD, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, for lung cancer. You know, any issues with the lungs, we found success in using this. Now, the lungs produce a lot of hydrogen peroxide. Hydrogen peroxide is produced on every cell of the body. Hydrogen peroxide kills foreign invaders. It helps oxygenate tissue. Iodine is the universal antiseptic. There's no bacteria, virus, parasite that's resistant to iodine. The lungs contain a huge amount of iodine if the body has enough iodine. And the lungs can fight back and with infection with, you know, iodine. Iodine also stimulates immune system cells and decreases the ability for cytokine storm or when a big inflammatory process happens with the lungs, which is what we've seen with COVID. So I was confident that this therapy would help people. And just like your daughter reported, after one or two treatments, that's what we heard from our patients. They couldn't breathe. They would nebulize hydrogen peroxide and iodine. Usually the reports were the second dose. I'd have them do it every hour while they were sick and then start backing off as they were feeling better. And usually the second dose, about 2 hours into it, their lungs would start to open up, they could breathe, their cough was better, and they felt better. It was really a pretty remarkable treatment. And, you know, I was posting testimonials of this online, and I wrote a peer-reviewed paper about it. And it wasn't just hydrogen peroxide. We treated people with high doses of oral vitamins A, C, D, and iodine for 4 days. And then if they were worse, we had them come in our parking lot, and we give them IVs of vitamin C, hydrogen peroxide, and shots of ozone. And this therapy was remarkably successful with our sick COVID patients, and it's still successful today. It's not an anti-COVID therapy. It's not an anti-coronavirus therapy. It's an immune-stimulating therapy. It supports the body's immune system. It supports the biochemistry and physiology of the body and gives people a chance to recover from it. The biggest mistake we made in this whole crisis was tell people, just stay home. You're sick. Well, just stay home, isolate yourself, come to the hospital when you can't breathe. And by then, the virus had set in. It was deeper in the body. It was harder to treat. And the consequences of this strategy have been a disaster. You know, before the vaccines came out, we had over 400,000 dead. And it's a mess. And then when the obituary for COVID is finally written up, I want to have a part in writing it up because it's going to be a very ugly read for conventional medicine.
Yeah, I would agree. I think that people need to understand, when I sat down with you for the first time, and you drew this thing and you said, either you age, I love how you worded this, and I'm going to let you word it the correct way because I don't want to mess this up. But either you age because all of your hormones and your deficiencies have lowered, or because they've lowered, you age. Do you want to explain that theory on that? Because when you broke that down for me, it made me go,
So it's a line I've been using because it epitomizes of what I do. So I draw a little graph and I show new patients that aging could be a process of falling nutrient and hormone levels. On the other hand, falling nutrient and hormone levels could be causing aging and the diseases related to aging. It's kind of a chicken or egg question, which comes first. But I can tell you what's not a chicken or egg question. When I have somebody come in, I do laboratory analysis, a full panel workup, and you evaluate where they fall for their age, hormonally and nutritionally. You can see that the lower they fall in these categories, usually the sicker they are. And you know, it goes in a stepwise progression from, you know, I just don't feel good to maybe levels up here. They have a chronic illness maybe here or an autoimmune disease. Then they have a disease that could kill them. Their levels are down here. And if they're sick with it or dying with it, they're lower yet. Now, the chicken or egg question comes into play here, which is causing which. But I can tell you for without a doubt, when a patient moves from really low levels to higher levels or even best to age appropriate levels, their disease does better. They feel better. Their aging process does better. And overall, their physiology and biochemistry improves. It's played out over and over and over in my practice over 30 years. That's what I've written my 16 books on. That's what gets me up every morning, gets me excited to go to work, because I still like seeing patients. I still like the detective work and still like the one-on-one aspect of treating my patients and working with them to help them improve their diet. You know, make sure they know the importance of drinking water. Make sure they understand it's really important to exercise. And you know, the most important thing is they got to eat good. They got to keep sugar out of their diet. They got to keep refined foods out of their diet. And they got to eat healthy foods full of nutrients. We should be getting nutrients from our food, not eating food that's stealing nutrients from our body.
What's an example of eating food that steals nutrients from the body?
Any refined foods. So the refining food process removes nutrients. And the reason the big food companies do this refining process is they can sit on the shelf longer. For example, refined flour can sit on the shelf basically forever. All the nutrients have been removed from it. And when you eat bread or pasta or cakes or cookies made with refined flour and refined sugar and other refined ingredients, it causes your body to use its own nutrients to break it down. It has a hard time breaking it down. It has a hard time getting rid of it. It screws up our bacteria levels. It's not healthy food. We don't get anything from it. We were designed by our maker to eat food in order to gather nutrients from the food that we store for use when we need them. And unfortunately, our food supply, the nutrient levels have been going down over the last 40 to 50 years, and we've become more deficient. And I've seen increased deficiencies since I've been practicing medicine over the last three decades. And either we learn to eat better or we're going to continue on our bad course in health in our country. I mean, think about it, Jason. We spend the most money on healthcare of any Western country, about 20% of our GNP. We finish last in every single health indicator by the World Health Organization, from maternal mortality at birth to neonatal mortality at birth to chronic illness to longevity in men and women. We are last or next to last. I think it's only one category we're next to last compared to every Western country out there. Yet we spend over twofold what almost every other Western country spends. So we're not getting the bang for our buck. Two-thirds of us are overweight. One-third of us are obese. Is there any wonder why coronavirus hit us so hard? Here we have the most modern healthcare system. You get a heart attack, you get in a car accident. Hey, I want to be in the nearest emergency room that can treat me, that I know how to treat heart attacks and broken bones and motor vehicle injury problems. But for chronic illness and for anti-aging care and for long-term care, conventional medicine has really failed us. And, you know, we're spending too much money on drugs that don't work. We're not addressing this poor food supply. We're too heavy as a country. And this was the perfect storm for coronavirus to come in and really nail us bad. And it's a sad state. It's really should be a wake-up call for all of us to get our act in order, and particularly for conventional medicine to get its act in order.
So you've practiced conventional medicine some before you got into holistic medicine, correct?
Yes. I started off a conventional doctor. I wasn't interested in any of this holistic stuff. I came from a regular household. We went to the doctor when we were sick. We took whatever the doctor gave us. We never questioned anything from the doctor. We never took a vitamin, never saw a chiropractor or alternative healthcare provider. And so I went to med school just to model myself after my family doctor that treated my severe case of asthma as a child. And my turning point came about 6 months into practicing that. I finished my residency. I was thrilled. I couldn't wait to go out on my own and start seeing patients on my own. And about 6 months into practicing, you know, conventional medicine, I realized something was wrong. I didn't know what was wrong at first. I was getting anxious and I was losing sleep and I was just not sure what was happening. And then after a few sleepless nights, I'm getting up to get ready for work. And I tell my wife, Allison, I don't want to be a doctor anymore. She's known me since I was 18 years old. We had $100,000 in student loans. And this is all I wanted to do. And she said, what's wrong? And I'm like, I don't know, but I can't do this. And she said, well, tell me more. And I said, well, all I'm doing is treating people with drugs that are creating problems in their body. And I'm having to use more drugs for the first drugs. And they're not getting better. And I can't do this for 40 years. I'm not helping people. So she said, what are you going to do about it? And I'm like, I don't know what I'm going to do about it. And the short version of the story is I got handed a book by a patient, Healing with Nutrition, by Jonathan Wright, who's an allopathic doctor. And he wrote about nutritional therapies in medicine, and that such as, you know, heart disease was not a medication deficient problem. It was a hormonal and nutrient problem. And so my first patient, after reading this book, I called my dad in the office. He was my first patient I tried anything holistic on. My dad had his first heart attack at 40, his second heart attack at 42. By the time I was done with my residency and in this 6 month period, he had two bypass surgeries, a few more angioplasties. He was on 12 medications for diabetes, hypertension, heart disease. He looked awful, was pale and pasty, looked like he was going to die at any minute. I was waiting for the phone call that he had died to come in. And he was taking nitroglycerin pills for continual angina for 20 years. He was popping nitros like they were mints, because anytime he moved, he was getting chest pain. Or anytime he exerted himself, he was getting chest pain. So I called my dad in the office. I checked a few lab tests on him. I put him on a couple of natural therapies, which were natural hormones. Nobody had bothered really checking. And within 7 days, his angina went away. Within 30 days, his cholesterol in the 300s fell below 200 without changing any of his bad dietary habits. And he looked from pale and pasty to pink and healthier. He was doing things. He wasn't, calls me up a week later and he says, hey, I haven't used a nitro pill today. I'm like, wow, you know, how long has it been? He goes, oh, I don't know, 20 years. And, you know, calls me up another week later and says, I haven't used a nitro pill in a week now. So when I saw the changes in my dad, I knew that's what I want to do in medicine. I just did a 180 at that point. I went to the partner in the practice I was going to be a partner with and told him, you know, I'm going to leave. And he said, what's wrong? And I told him, I'm going to go do holistic medicine. He said, why are you going to do that? I said, I think it's a better way to practice medicine. He said, what is it? I'm like, I don't really know right now, but I'm going to figure it out. And he said, why don't you just do it here? And I'm like, no, I need to go find my own office and do this my own way. And here I am, you know, 28 years later, 16 books later. You know, I have a national newsletter I write about this. It's made medicine fun. I feel like I'm doing the right thing. And I see the results in my patients every day.
That's exciting stuff. And that's a leap of faith. Any successful person has to take that leap and bet on themselves. I've given you some of my book to read and you were kind to give me some tips, but one of the things I talk about there, scared money don't make money. And you got to bet on yourself. And you were betting on yourself because you had a why. You had a reason of something that you liked. You saw the difference in your dad. You felt like that was more impactful for you than just prescribing medicine for medicine for medicine. And that's always been my fear. I mean, I've never been in the medical field. I didn't go to college or anything, but I've always been scared of medicine. Like, why do we always have to take Advil? Why do we always have to take Tylenol? I don't want to take that. You see, in today's world, how many people, I mean, I've lost 4 out of 5 kids I was friends with in high school, 4 are dead from drug overdose. And I've never done any hardcore drugs or done anything, but they started with painkillers because they were in pain, led to an addiction. The list goes on with all 4 of these guys that I grew up with. And it's wild to me. I've always been so nervous to even try to take medicine. Do you think that plays a part too? Like now that you see the way modern medicine is now, is it worse now than it was 30 years ago?
Well, it's interesting. You know, your gut instincts about the medicine is true and you should be questioning everything, you know? Everybody should be questioning. I saw a patient yesterday. I was explaining to him why I wanted him to cut sugar out of his diet. And he was arguing with me. His daughter brought him in, who's been my patient for years. And she said, oh, Dr. Brownstein, I apologize. I should have warned you about my dad before you brought him in. I'm like, hey, that's okay. This is a partnership here. He's driving the car. I'm just telling him turn right, turn left. He needs to make a decision what he wants to do. But 99% of medicines on the market do one of 2 things. They poison enzymes in the human body, and they block receptors. That's how they're designed. Because you can only use patentable stuff. Big pharma can only patent unnatural items, you know, which is drugs. They can't patent vitamin C. They can't patent broccoli. They can't patent, you know, vitamin A. So they alter these things, and they call them drugs. So these things, because they're unnatural substances, poison enzymes, block receptors in the body. My premise has been since my dad that once I started looking into why are these 2 therapies helping him, because I was supporting his immune system. I was supporting his biochemistry. I was supporting his physiology. I was supporting his immune system, not blocking it, not poisoning it. And so that core tenet has sort of molded me for the last 28 years. And when you say you got to take a leap, one of the interesting things that I told you that you sent me 2 chapters of your book to review. And it was about 9:45 at night. And I'm like, I'll read a chapter or part of a chapter right now. I stayed up till about an hour reading them both, thinking about it. Because it is really important to find your, I always tell my kids, you know, I've told my kids since they were young, find your passion. If you find your passion and you're helping people and you're doing the right thing, you're going to make money, you're going to be able to support yourself, and you're going to be happy doing it. And I said, if you don't have that passion, you know, it's just like making widgets. You know, eventually you're going to get bored. Eventually you're not going to like it. And eventually you're not going to like yourself. And that's when people start turning to drugs and alcohol and antidepressants and, you know, other things to dull themselves from the pain that they're in. So I think your book has a really good message for people. And, you know, when I made that leap of faith and I fired my lawyer, told my partner, hey, I'm going to leave and go open this office. He said, how are you going to do it? And I'm like, I don't know. And my wife was pregnant with my first child. And I went to Allison, talked to her about it. She supported me from ground zero. And she said, hey, if that's what you want to do, let's do this. And she never asked me, how are we going to buy food? How are we going to pay things? Look, I was thinking about that. Let me tell you, I was going to work the emergency room. I was going to work nights. I was going to make it work no matter what happened. But the interesting thing with that story was the biggest fight I got into was with my father. He said, what do you mean you're not going to be a partner in that practice? And I told him, and he goes, you got a baby coming in 2 months. I'm like, Dad, I know I have a baby coming. He goes, well, how are you going to support this child? I'm like, I'll figure it out, Dad. I'm going to do this. And he asked me one more question, and that's it. I blew up, and we started having this huge fight. And you know, I told him at that point I needed his support. I didn't need more anxiety. And I said, I can handle this. I'm gonna. If I have to work two jobs, I'll work two jobs. I said in my heart, I knew this was the right thing to do, and you know, it was my passion, and I found that passion, and I'm thankful to God that I have that passion and found it, and it's really served me well over the last 28 years. I wouldn't change a thing about it.
This episode is sponsored by Podbean Advertising Marketplace. Podcast advertising is one of the most cost-effective ways to advertise your product or service. Just like you're hearing this, thousands of people could be hearing your ad. For much less than radio or other media, you can reach local listeners with podcast advertising. Podcast awareness and listening continue to rise. In fact, according to Edison Research, podcast listeners have grown by 29.5% since 2018. Chartable reports, podcast listeners tend to have significantly higher household incomes than the U.S. average, and they tend to be significantly more educated than the U.S. average. This is great news because you can run your own ads on podcasts easily for an affordable price with Podbean Advertising Marketplace. Set a daily budget cap, analyze results, and modify campaigns on the fly. And the best part is, these ads are highly targeted. Choose your location, city, state, county, and target by customer interest. Get into the ears of your perfect customer without blowing your budget. Go to podbean.com/true underdog. That's podbean.com/true underdog to start boosting your business with podcast advertising now. The process is super easy. Podbean can have a professional voice artist record the ad for you, or you can upload your own audio. Again, that's podbean.com/true underdog to get your ads on podcasts just like this one.
Yeah, no regrets, obviously. I love that. So when do you think modern medicine is needed? Because obviously it is needed sometimes. And I think that I think the perception of some people out there, it was me before I met you, before I met Jeff, was holistic medicine. I mean, I don't want to have to take any kind of narcotics or pills to do anything, but I don't know if that stuff works. And really, people don't know the approach that you're using holistic medicine unless it's something you really need with modern medicine. Explain that.
So modern medicine is needed. Look, I was trained as a conventional doctor. I still use it. You have pneumonia. You have bacterial pneumonia. You need antibiotics. And I'll prescribe the antibiotics for you. You might even need steroids with those antibiotics. But you could also take IVs of vitamin C. You could also do IVs of hydrogen peroxide. You could also nebulize hydrogen peroxide. And the consequence of doing those latter three things is you're going to need less antibiotics, you're going to get better quicker, and you're going to have less chance of being hospitalized and put on a ventilator and needing more stronger antibiotics that can screw up your gut flora and screw up your immune system. So, I mean, look, like I said before, if you have a car accident and you break bones, I want to be in the nearest emergency room. And I have a heart attack. We treat heart attacks pretty well. Mortality from acute heart attacks has gone down dramatically over the last two or three decades. But the long-term care here for arthritis, for long-term care for heart disease, for diabetes, you know, all these chronic conditions, you know, obesity that has affected two-thirds of us and driven up our healthcare costs. And, you know, our mortality rates, our longevity rates are falling in men and women. You know, it's been a disaster, as I mentioned at the beginning. And we need a better mousetrap for outpatient therapy. And I'm telling you, COVID was the perfect storm to nail us. And we should have a Manhattan Project called for by the federal government to figure out what happened with COVID and to figure out what went wrong and how we can prevent this. And the first thing we need to do is figure out why two-thirds of us are overweight and one-third are obese and how we're going to get over this. So until we do something like that, until we have a reckoning with that, we'll just keep going down the same road. And you know, we're going to get poor results with the next virus that comes around or the next bacterial infection. And we'll just chalk it up to that's the way life is. Well, I'm not willing to chalk it up like that. That's not how I practice medicine.
Yeah, no, for the listeners out there that are focused on natural wellness lifestyles, but are feeling the effects of the pandemic or their mental well-being, can you touch on what gut health is and the connection to mental health?
So there are more immune system cells in the gut than anywhere in the body. So we need a healthy gut to have a healthy immune system. There's also a gut-brain connection that, you know, I mean, it wasn't hard to, you know, make that connection before the studies recently revealed there is actually a gut-brain connection. So if the gut's unhappy, the brain's going to be unhappy. And we've got so many, you know, we take more antidepressants than any people on the face of the planet. We take more stimulant drugs than any people on the face of the planet. We take more mood-altering drugs than any people on the face of the planet. And I think we're doing this because we're just an unhealthy group. Now, that's not to say that antidepressants and mood stimulants and things like that don't have benefits. They do. And some people need them. And I'm not opposed to prescribing things when people need them. But I think too many people are using them with poor effects. And if we cleaned up our diet, if we did a little exercise, drank water and maintained hydration, and keep salt levels up in the body, make sure you have adequate iodine, and, you know, do a little bit of exercise. Those are the basic things you can do, and you're going to need less medication. You're going to feel better. Your energy will be better. Your brain will be better. You'll be able to work, you know, long hours without coming home and just, you know, collapsing. And, you know, look, I come home from work. I'm tired. I'm on the computer for 2 hours reading when I get home. You know, it's not that I'm not tired, but I'm not exhausted where I can't do anything. And I have what I would consider pretty good energy level. And I ask every patient that comes in, you know, 0 to 100%, where's your energy level at? And they should all be over 90%. They should all be feeling good all the time. And it includes into old age. Fatigue is not where we should be. The most common complaint I hear from my patients is they're fatigued. Yeah, and they're tired of being fatigued. And, you know, it feels like the whole country's fatigued right now. But there is, you have to take ownership of what you're eating and what you do. And, you know, your body's like a machine. You know, you can either, you know, I always give the analogy of the patients, you can put bad gas in the car and you don't have to really wonder why the car's running poorly. So why are you putting bad gas in it? And our bodies are the same way. It needs good food. It doesn't need bad food. And refined food, refined sugar, flour, salt, oils, terrible for the body. They gum up the body. They cause us to lose nutrient levels. We don't get any nutrients from them. We use up our nutrients to try and break down this lousy food. And then we become nutrient deficient. It's just a vicious circle that goes on. So one, you know, I started writing books to help my patients, you know, find their way and to hear what I'm thinking. And we find really good results in our practice doing what we're doing.
You've got 16 books, you said. I just wrote my first 16 books. So touch base on a couple of the books that you think really made an impact out there.
Well, I mean, my latest book, A Holistic Approach to Viruses, which here it is. I wrote that in the middle of the coronavirus epidemic, you know, after I got censored by the FTC. And
that's crazy. You got censored by the FTC.
Censored because I was reporting on successes treating COVID patients. And in that success, I didn't say we were treating coronavirus. I never said I had a cure for coronavirus. My patients got sick like everybody else has got sick. I got sick with coronavirus like everybody else got sick. And what I was saying was I was supporting the immune system. My patients were not getting hospitalized, not developing pneumonia, and no one needed ventilation. Nobody died in our practice still to today.
Yeah, you helped 85 patients, right? And you had 100% survival rate. Nobody went hospitalized or died, correct?
I wrote a peer-reviewed paper of 107 patients. And the first 107 patients we treated, we should have had something like 8 deaths in there. We had 0 deaths. And I think we had 2 hospitalizations in there. We should have had 16 or 18, I think, from what the numbers were at that time. And got a peer review. And then we get this FTC letter, you know, stop posting, you know, your success stories, basically. And because there's no research saying what you say is true. So when I published my peer-reviewed study, we contacted the FTC and said, hey, we want to publish this on our website without commentary. You said there's no studies. Here's a study in a journal. And the FTC said, no, it's not a randomized controlled trial. Can't put it up there. So there was no randomized controlled trials at that point. It was new into COVID. No, nobody had any trials out there. We were all flying by the seat of our pants. And I was titling my blog post, There's Still Hope Out There. Because at that point, a year ago, there was no hope, man. You got admitted to the hospital, you think you were going to die. And they were dying at large rates when they were ventilated. You know, 88% of people, you know, who got ventilated were dead, you know, at the beginning of this crisis. So I was posting on there. I was hearing from doctors all over the country on the front lines treating patients, you know, asking me, how do you mix up the peroxide? How do you, you know, what vitamin regimen are you doing? You know, what's the dosing and all that, even though I was posting it all. And then, you know, I got a letter from the FTC saying you have 48 hours to take it down or you're here from the U.S. Justice Department. So we complied. We took it down. We consulted a First Amendment attorney for a lot of money. And the attorney basically presented us at the end of his analysis. He said to me, I would imagine he's in his 70s. He's been doing First Amendment work for 40 plus years. And he said, you do not have First Amendment protection to talk about COVID. He goes, you should. And he said, if you want to fight this, this could go to the Supreme Court and we'll fight it, but you're going to need $20 million or so as a retainer. And if, he goes, if you have that, we'll do it. And he says, if you don't have it and you want to practice medicine, my advice to you is stop. Don't write about it. You can't do anything. You can't post anything on the internet about it. That's the way of the world we live in now. So I said to him, hey, I'm 3/4 away writing this book of, you know, my success in COVID. He goes, oh, you can write the book. The book has First Amendment protection. You don't, but the book does. So that's how that book came about. And, you know, the other books I've written a book on iodine. I've written a book on thyroid disorders. I've written a book on natural hormones, arthritis. You know, I have a host, you know, like I said, I got 16 of them, but I just write about what works in my practice. And, you know, I try and make it easy for the reader to understand the biochemistry and physiology behind it. Because look, if I can't explain how what I'm doing, then I'm either don't know what I'm doing or I'm hiding something about it. But it should be easy to understand. And the human body is a very complex structure, but it's not that complex to support the human body and to give it the basic raw materials it needs. That's it's not simple, but it's not that complex. And that's what we should be doing in medicine. What's more complex is to give people drugs that poison enzymes and block receptors and expect them to do well over the long term. That's a pretty complex topic. And the reason it's complex is it doesn't work. So that's why we're in the mess we're in right now. And look, compare our health to the health of any other Western country out there. Folks, it ain't pretty. We finish last on every one of those health indicators. And it's a sad state of affairs that we're in right now.
Do you think the youth, I mean, there's some issues with the youth and what they do, in my opinion, you know, how they protest and they're, you know, they're finger pointing and lazy sometimes, not all, but a handful. But what they do see is there's a problem with our food. There's a problem that other countries have cleaner, healthier, more nutritional food than what we have. I hear that from my kids and young people that work for me all the time, like our food here is horrible and everything's processed. And so do you think at least maybe the youth is starting to understand how important the food is?
You know, I think that the answer is yes, absolutely yes. And I see it with the young med students and the residents who come rotate with me. They're much more open-minded to this stuff. The doctors my age and older, oh my goodness, you would think I'm dropping, I don't know what, that I'm dropping acid on people or something. You know, the comments that I hear and, you know, the swear words directed at me are really something, you know, when you try and lecture to a group of conventional doctors about these things. I remember I lectured to a group of cardiologists years ago about why they should avoid using statin drugs. And I showed the pathway and I said, look, these drugs are poisoning this enzyme. This is leading to a downstream effect of this, this, and this. And they're not going to do well long-term. They can't. If you just look at this, you can predict this is what's going to happen. And, you know, they were having none of it. They weren't listening. They not only did they not listen, they were lobbing swear words at me from the audience, which didn't sit well with me. But so I do think we need the youth engaged. We need the youth to push forward a cleaner environment, to get the pesticides and synthetic hormones out of our food supply, to eat more healthy food and to make a change. Because unfortunately, my generation, you know, I told my kids a couple of weeks ago when we were having dinner, you know, I apologized to them. I said, my parents left a better world for me to start my young adulthood life and build a practice and build a life for myself. I'm not leaving that for you guys. Our world is going to be, it's going to be rougher for you guys. Everything's going to be rougher. Everything's going to be harder. And you know, you guys are going to have to work harder at this. And I, you know, I apologized to him. I said, I'm sorry we're leaving it to you this way, but this is what you've got. So you guys have to make the change because we weren't able to do it.
No, it's so true. I think it's important that people understand, you know, what you do and you touched about a few times is the best way to think about holistic medicine is it's a better way than just taking drugs, which aren't good for you, to get things healthy again. And if that doesn't work and you need to go the other direction, like you said, that's fine, but there's so many majority of people that see a difference. My wife, I'll use an example, saw doctor after doctor after doctor, medicine after medicine, all kinds of issues. Couldn't get her hair to grow back, couldn't get her color back. Her hair is full grown. She's happy as can be, game changer. I'm seeing it with my 17-year-old. You know, we lived at a lake in Mooresville, North Carolina, where there's a lot of thyroid cancer, a lot of the eye cancer happening because there's coal ash. And so people are having all these issues in the well water and in the environment. It's actually a cancer cluster. And when we lived there, Liz had a PICC line. And my son's eyes were always dark. And so when we moved to Michigan, it cleaned up a little bit. But just paying attention and taking a lot of the minerals and the vitamins and the things that we have to take that you know, you prescribe is a game changer. Like, everyone feels a little better. And then we're not having to take some kind of medicine made in big pharma for profit. That's where I think people are missing it. We get used to that, and all that can do is lead to addiction and create other problems. You should only have to use that when you have to use that, correct?
Absolutely. But, you know, like, do the basics, for God's sakes. Eat good. Learn what foods are good, what foods are bad. Drink enough water to maintain hydration. Keep your salt levels up, because the next major constituent next to water in the body is salt. And take iodine. I mean, those are some basic things that I see in my practice. Iodine levels across the U.S. have fallen over 50% over the last 40 years. And the consequences of falling iodine levels are thyroid problems, breast problems, prostate problems, ovarian problems, uterine problems, pancreas problems. What are we seeing problems with in people today? Thyroid cancer is the fastest growing cancer. 1 in 7 women have breast cancer across the U.S. That should be. I don't understand why women aren't marching on Washington on that one. 1 in 3 men have prostate cancer. Pancreatic cancer growing at epidemic rates, ovarian, uterine cancer skyrocketing. And the underlying cause of that in part is iodine deficiency. And then, you know, throw in bad hormones that they're feeding the animals and we're exposed to, and pesticides and things. It's a disaster. It's a recipe for disaster. So things can change. It's not all doom and gloom, but people have to take the initiative. They have to take responsibility for what they're eating and whether they're exercising, whether they're drinking water, and whether they're not. And once you own up to your responsibility, once you start making the changes, you can see the results too. It can be a really positive thing.
During your going against the grain, I love that. You know, most doctors are, you said you're getting the F-bombs, people are cussing you out. They feel like, oh, how dare you? Like, you know, like when someone says, I don't eat McDonald's, and you, all those people that eat McDonald's, what are you better than me? Like, that's, I think, the concept of some of these physicians that, they get that. It's because they don't know. Like, even your old partner, what do you mean by that? What they don't know scares them. And I believe there are people that are sheep and there are people that are lions. And sheep go where it's easier to just flow and not be as noticed. And that's what a lot of those physicians are. Not all, but a lot of them. It's like that in my business. It's like that from people who just work for companies and people who want to build companies. And there's nothing wrong with those that just want to work for companies. But every now and then there's a lion. There's someone who's going to lead the way and go against the grain and be different. And it intimidates people. And that's why they mock you. And that's why they say things, because they get intimidated. You know something they don't. You're doing something they're not. So they'd almost have to have a team of people to talk about it and feel about it because they're insecure about it. That's a fact. And that happens in business. And that happens in what you're doing in the healthcare industry. That happens all over the world. Anything you want to touch base on that?
It's all true. And what's going to change things is when people own up to what they're doing and what they're not doing and try and make their lives better. And in regards to health, you can make your lives better, your life better. You just need to take some ownership in it. And just look, I give the analogy, just like you go to the gas station to fill up your car, are you going to put in mud in that gas tank if it was 10 cents a gallon because it's so much cheaper? You're not going to do that. You're going to pay $3 a gallon and put in decent gas so the car doesn't fall apart. Well, our bodies are the same way. You put in mud in the body, you put in junk, refined sugar, flour, salt, oil, your body is not going to do well. You know, it's not designed for that. And just like your car is not designed to run on mud, our bodies aren't designed to run on mud either. So it's time for people to wake up. I agree with you. There's too much sheepishness out there right now. We've seen it with COVID. People are scared out of their minds. And look, it's scary. I can't deny it. You know, especially a year ago, 88% were dying. There were, you know, the reports on the news media were terrible. However, my patients weren't dying. My patients weren't getting hospitalized. My patients weren't getting pneumonia. My patients were getting better. All I was doing was reporting on it. And I was told to cease and desist. So there are messages out there. You have to search for them a little bit. And once you educate yourself on this stuff, you'll feel better. You won't be fearful. You'll be able to make an informed decision. And you'll be proud of that decision that you make. So just allowing yourself to be led around, whether it's in medicine or business or whatever, not the way I wanted to live my life. And 30 years of doing this, it was the best thing I ever did. And it was interesting when I'm in front of those cardiologists and I got this biochemical slide behind me and I'm pointing to where this pathway is poison and why you shouldn't use this drug that everybody was using. I mean, it was one of the top drugs prescribed in cardiology. And I said, it should be pulled from the market. Anyone using this drug might be subjected to malpractice. I mean, these studies show it fails. And oh my God, the swear words start calling and this and that. And this doctor gets up and he says, you're wrong. And he goes, he's facing me from the first row and he turns his back to me and he says to the group, there's over 100 people there, all the people that taught me. And he said, I want a meeting with the medical students, residents, and fellows when we're done so I can show you where he's wrong. And he sits down. So I said to him, why don't you come out up here and show me where I'm wrong? We can talk about this. And he said, I'm not coming up there. And I said, well, how about I'll come to the meeting. I'll sit in the back of the room. I won't say a word, so at least I can hear where I'm wrong since you won't come up here right now. And that was pretty much the end of my talk at that point. He didn't come up there. I don't know if he had the meeting or he didn't have the meeting, but at that point, I knew I was on the right track since basically he wasn't really telling me why I'm wrong. He's just saying you're wrong, you know, just.
Well, listen, I mean, I appreciate what you do. I mean, there you have it, folks. It's been an honor to have you on the show, Dr. David Brownstein. You've given us the holy grail of protecting ourselves and boosting our immune system. Bam. Underdogs, don't sleep on this one. Live by it. You heard it here first. How can my listeners and viewers stay in touch with you and continue to benefit from your resources?
So all my stuff is on my website, drbrownstein.com, drbrownstein, B-R-O-W-N-S-T-E-I-N.com. And you know, I have an office in West Bloomfield, Michigan. And, you know, take a look at what I've written. And, you know, hopefully when COVID settles down, I'll get my blog post back up there. But I'm not done talking about this. I'm, you know, might not be able to put it on my website yet, but, you know, I can come on your show and do it. And you know what? And as the truth comes out, which is starting to come out now, with you know, what's happening with Dr. Fauci, we'll see what the end of the true story with COVID was, you know, at the end of this.
Well, I can go on record saying I think it's, look, and I apologize to those that have lost people from COVID. I believe it's real, but I also believe it's a huge hoax on the way the media has made it bigger than it is, scaring more people. And I believe that the recovery is going to be worse than what the disease was because of the way they did that. That I truly believe. And that's the part that's going to be like, that was wrong. And you know, that's the part that's the hoax, not the disease itself, but the way that they've put it on air and scared everybody, these fear tactics. It's just, I think it's the wrong thing to do.
Totally wrong thing to do. We didn't educate people. We just scared them. And we told people for, what was it? March to December, January. So 9 months, we told people just stay at home, hide at home, hide in your basement at home. And you get sick, stay at home till you can't breathe, then go to the emergency room. What do we got for that? We got hundreds of thousands of people dead. If we had treated people early like I was doing, I agree with Dr. Peter McCullough, a cardiologist from Texas. You'd have 75, 80% less deaths. You'd probably have 100,000 people dead. It would have been a regular flu season, a severe flu season. We wouldn't be having this nonsense talk that we're having right now. But, you know, that's what we did. Now we're going to have to live with it. Now we're going to have to go study what we did wrong, what we did right, and you know, how to make this better for the next one that comes.
Do you remember when, and we're wrapping it up right now, but do you remember when AIDS was a big deal and they'd have the billboards of people with oxygen masks on and everybody was going to die of that? Remember? They also were scaring people with that. And it was a bad disease, but they were making the whole world want to crumble from it.
I was a medical student and resident when AIDS started and continued. I vividly remember them saying that, we're going to lose a quarter of our population or something like that. You know, millions will be dead with AIDS. And look, same thing happened with SARS-1, the swine flu, you know, Zika. You know, we've been through a bunch of these. And this one was the perfect storm. This was more contagious than, you know, a lot of things, and airborne contagious. And we have 2/3 of our country comorbidly obese. And we got too many drugs people are taking. You know, and it was just the perfect storm to really nail us. So let's learn from it. Let's move on and let's not let it happen again.
Bam. I love that. Thank you, Dr. Brownstein. That is an episode here on True Underdog. Bam.
And that concludes another episode here on True Underdog. If you're interested in hearing more, make sure you subscribe at iHeartRadio, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or the YouTube channel. You can always visit trueunderdog.com, subscribe to all of them. Make sure you check out our newest episodes coming out on Mondays and Thursdays. True Underdog, baby.
Damn, damn, True Underdog. Damn, damn. Unleash the power.